Beyond the Dark on Radio City 96.7 and City Talk 105.9.
Tonight, Beyond the Dark, we're going to talk now to Lee Walker, who has got a book that if you saw it, you would not buy it because the cover is so scary. Is that a good description, Lee?
Apart from the not buying a bit, yeah. I mean, to be fair, I had nothing to do with the artwork. It was actually the publishers who did that. It's actually great. Central to one of the stories in the book, you see.
It's actually great, Lee. It's a fantastic picture, and it makes you want to buy the book. If you're into this in the world of Supernatural, it's great. And also, you're involved with a magazine, which, by the way, the Giant Crab Monsters of Merseyside. I wish we could find giant crabs, because I love crabs.
Me too.
I would be thrilled.
Well, I'm a vegetarian, but I do eat fish and crabs. So.
Right, let's talk about the book, first of all.
Okay.
It looks fabulous. It's called Dead of Night, and it really is a very interesting book. Tell us about the book.
Well, basically, there's a publishing firm in Devon who got in contact with me through the magazine, really. And they said, well, why don't you do a sort of best of the magazine that you publish? And I wanted to write a book that you said before about the cover. It's not really indicative of what's inside the book. I mean, if you had a look at a piece. I mean, basically, I want to appeal to people who normally wouldn't like necessarily be interested in the supernatural. Mm-hmm. There's so many books out there. I mean, you know yourself, there's hundreds and thousands of paranormal books. And the majority of them tend to be either, the usual, the thin little pamphlets for tourists or the heavy academic type books that you can't understand half the words in them. I want to write one that's basically, that people have to say, who may not necessarily profess to have an interest in the supernatural, but they're like campfire ghost stories, I suppose, really. Yeah. Where you can sit down and just enjoy the story and the childlike sense of wonder of being not frightened every single time. But I think that, it's something within us that I think we all enjoy being scared at times. I think, it's one of those primal emotions that we have, And I just want to try and tap into that and I'd say write something that, because I know there's a lot of Liverpool or Merseyside-based paranormal writers who tend to stick to the facts and I don't preach in the book, I don't profess any type of belief system. It's just about this sheer enjoyment of good ghost stories that are meant to be true. Now, whether they're true or not is obviously, that's the caveat. It's up to the reader themselves to interpret whether it's true or not. But like I say, I think we're getting away a little bit. I won't name names, but there are certain writers who they've moved away from the sense of wonder of something. These type of stories are meant to be interesting. Yeah. They're meant to be to fire the imagination. And certain books that I've read recently, they're almost as boring as the.
That's interesting. You say boring, Lee. What is your involvement? Why did you get involved with the paranormal?
Well, basically. When I was very, 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 very young, my auntie used to come around. She's Irish. She'd come around every Christmas Eve and tell us ghost stories. When we were about 8, 9, 10 years of age. And we went to bed terrified. But I have to say, obviously, that's a strong impression. My mum and dad said they lived in a haunted house in Birkenhead. I don't know how true that is. They swear to God it is. And I think those sort of form the sort of like. The embers, if you like, of a lifetime interest, really. I mean, I've been interested since I was a kid, and I once wrote a book that was semi-autobiographical as well, that people could obviously relate to. Yeah. I mean, you've looked at it, I'm sure. I mean, there's stuff there that's nothing to do with the paranormal, like being bullied at school, growing up, your first love, all that type of stuff that's almost like Ray Bradbury, Stephen King, it's like, but only on a Merseyside basis. And I think that transcends it a little bit. I mean, obviously, Supernatural is a major interest of mine. Whether I believe it or not, I'm open-minded, to be fair, Pete. I mean, I don't know about yourself.
If you're like that, then, how can you be involved with a magazine called Dead of Night?
Because it's a passionate interest. Basically, I get told stories by people, not just family, friends. Obviously, I used to be on a radio show years ago, and I got loads of stories sent to me, and I respect their beliefs, And as I say, I'm totally open-minded, and I'm not sceptical. I think everyone should be open-minded about the subject. I think I've seen enough things have happened as well that have made me think, well, that has it must have a rational explanation, but I can't think of one, And so for that reason, as I say, it's a lifetime fascination. And I think, I want to share that with other people, obviously, you know.
One of the most interesting stories in this area has, over the years, and it crops up over and over again, is Spring Heel Jack.
Yeah, of course.
Now, you've written about it in Dead of Night, the magazine.
That's correct. Well, there's two things. First of all, my granddad, who was from William Henry Street, swears, unfortunately, he passed away many years ago. He always swore he was part of a crowd who saw Spring Heel Jack back in 1904 in Everton. That story has since, been, I wouldn't say rubbished, but a lot of paranormal experts have said, well, no, that was actually mass hysteria, didn't occur. But my granddad, I wish he was alive today, obviously would be here to refute that. He swears he saw him. And I've also got a friend who saw something similar to Spring Heel Jack. He didn't claim it was Spring Heel Jack. I don't think he'd even heard of him. This is back in 1975. But he swore he saw a figure that looked uncannily like Spring Heel Jack. He described him as Batman at the time, actually, but he was leaping from attached to garages, and this was in Bromborough Road in on the border of Bromborough, really. And he swore he saw this figure, and to this day he swears, and he's no reason to lie about it. He's your best mate, and he insists he saw this type of figure, you know. So, but he was only about 11 years old at the time, so. Obviously, but he swears, and since seeing pictures of Spring Heel Jack, that's exactly what I saw. So, you know, again, Peter, I'm open-minded about it, as I say. So,
how big is the world of the paranormal in the north of England?
North England, it's pretty massive. I mean, we went to Pendle the weekend, and we found this cottage in that allegedly belongs to the famous Lancashire witches, and obviously, again, you know, a lot of tourism involved. But I have to say, I think it's massive, to be fair. I think it's one of the most popular subjects in the area, to be honest. I mean, I've got a friend of mine who works for a Whittle Paranormal Group, and he's basically, he's not just in it to make money, but the amount of people who've come along to his talks and that is phenomenal, you know. And I think, obviously, cynics will say, well, we've only wrote this book, obviously, to try and make money. But obviously, everyone wants to make money. But that's not why I wrote it. It's a labour of love. And I have to say, it's a subject that fascinates me. I think it fascinates many people. And I hope, obviously, they've actually commissioned three books. So the next one's called Mystery Animals of Merseyside. And, obviously, again, it's a fascinating subject. And there's so many different stories out there. I think people think, certain people have cornered the market, but there literally is. There's so much out there, you know.
Lee, tell us some of the stories in the book. Whet our appetite.
Okay. Well, there's a huge amount of different stories. I mean, obviously, you've seen it. It's nearly 400 pages. There's everything from, there's the horror of the Mersey mud flats, the haunters of the Wildwood, there's stilt wearing killer clowns, terrors of Liverpool Museum, there's ghostly nuns, night hags. Ominous Quatermass-style factories, Nightmare on Seal Street, evil Cyclopean stones, the ghostly dungeon of Leto Castle, Legend of Jenny Greenteeth. But the main story that's in there, and this is the one that the publishers particularly liked, was a story, and this happened to me. This is a true experience. So have I got time to tell you this story?
You have indeed.
Excellent. Okay. Well, basically, you've seen the cover. Obviously, it's of a goblin-type creature, isn't it, on the cover with a hammer. Well, basically, that image came from back in the spring of 1982 at my mum and dad's house in New Ferry. Basically, what happened was we had what we thought was two female rabbits. Turned out it was a buck and a doe. They had a litter of baby rabbits. They had seven. We took the buck away, kept the doe. And basically, what happened was everything was fine at first. We were told not to make a fuss of the rabbits because their mother would get jealous, could end up killing them. So we obviously kept the distance from them. And then one day, we just found one of the rabbits with its head completely squashed, just the head, nothing else. Now, bear in mind, this was in a rabbit hutch that was like predator-proof. We had to build this huge hutch. The only way into it was if you lifted the lid. It was literally tied down by string and bricks up on top of it. There was wire mesh all around it. A mouse couldn't have got in. And we couldn't work out, well, why just the one rabbit? Surely a predator, if it had broke into the hutch, would have, well, A, there would have been signs of damage to the hutch. And secondly, of course, why wouldn't it have killed the whole litter, you know? So anyway, that happened. It was strange. But systematically, over the next 4 or 5 days, these baby rabbits were being killed one by one, always in the same way, always with a totally flat head, no blood, absolutely no sign of entry. So we obviously suspected it must be a human responsible. So we basically had a nightly vigil. But we never seen the thing. And as soon as you stop the vigil, again, they started being killed. And so there was only two left. We then thought maybe the mother's killing them, because we were told, obviously, the mother can't get jealous. So we separated the mother from the remaining two babies. And the next moment, and again, just the one rabbit was killed. Bear in mind, it's got to be a human who's doing it. We put the last rabbit into the garden shed and put it in a plastic hamster cage and locked the shed. And the shed, again, nothing could get into that shed. But basically, my sister, and this was maybe coincidentally or not, it was actually April 30th, 1982. Now, April 30th, as you may be aware, is May Eve, which is sort of Teutonic equivalent of Halloween. And basically, evil spirits are meant to be abroad. And that may or may not be relevant. But basically, my sister, at about 8:30 at night, says, I'm going to go and check on the rabbits. She became convinced something had happened to it. She went into the shed. She came out screaming. And she swore to God, she said, she'd seen this goblin-type creature. I know it sounds ridiculous, but she was absolutely, she was about 11, 12 years old at the time. She was screaming in fear. So she'd seen this goblin with a hammer, tiny little figure, basically trying to push the hamster cage, the plastic top off, to get at the rabbits. So we thought she just must have imagined. It's complete nonsense. So, but we noticed the bricks had been moved. But anyway, we locked the shed, and we calmed her down. Next morning, we went into the shed, and, there was a rabbit with his head squashed, which there's no explanation. I can't think of a rational explanation, because no one could have broken it. The shed was locked. There's no signs of forced entry. But this rabbit was killed. And I just, for the life of me, cannot understand how that could have happened. Now, it seems totally irrational, but years later, I've researched it. It's actually not that uncommon an occurrence, pet mutilations. Now, whether it was a little goblin was responsible is obviously, completely and utterly, completely nuts. But I have to say, my sister's fear was real that night, and she still swears to this day, what she saw. And that inspired the publishers, to put that character, vile that it is, on the cover.
Tell me, in the magazine, the lead story is the giant crab monsters of Merseyside. Tell me what that's about.
Well, basically, it may be what you call an apocryphal story, or in other words, an urban legend. But basically, there's accounts, there's actually two accounts, one from the 1940s, where basically, outside the boat house in Park Gate, men were delivering beer, and there'd been a big storm, and they said they'd seen this huge, like, crab, basically, a gigantic. Now, it's not impossible, because obviously, crabs do grow to large size in the Pacific Ocean. It could have been swept, thousands of miles and out of its place. But basically, the main sighting was some girl who basically went on to Hilbury Island, was hiding from a mate. Was hiding in this cave, and basically what happened was she swears at the time that she had something behind her. She looked around and was just, confronted by this huge, crab, basically. It didn't actually attack her, but it had this claw and a pincer on her foot. It was, I can't remember exactly how big she said it was, but it was obviously about three times bigger than her. And she just ran for her life, basically. I'd swear to it was back in the 50s, and there's been no sighting since, by the way. But basically, they have become almost like urban legends. I've actually spoken to people in Parkgate who say, well, I had relatives who saw something similar, So whether or not it's an out-of-place giant crab from, I'm going to say giants, they could have been exaggerated. People see things larger, obviously, than maybe they really were. But that's basically the story. I mean, it sounds, as I say, it's an urban legend, but that's what they maintain these scenes. So,
Lee, how do they get the magazine?
Right, well, it's actually available from three shops, actually, in Liverpool. It's News From Nowhere on Bowles Street and Wales Apart on Lime Street. And it's also available from Stanley Marcus as well. I'm looking to for more retailers as well. I stopped doing it for a few years, and obviously I've resurrected it. And it seems to be doing pretty well. So obviously, the book's available on Amazon, all the usual, obviously Waterstone, W.B. Smith, or online at the moment. They haven't actually got it in the store yet, but they will be pretty soon.
The book is called Dead of Night. It's by Lee Walker. To finish off, Lee, tease us with one more story from the book.
Okay. Well, basically, there's the old, again, a tradition of the vanishing hitchhiker. I actually spoke to a taxi driver. I only know him by the name of Spud, so I won't embarrass him on air. But basically, he said he was driving through Dibbonsdale which is near to Spittal. It's renowned, actually. It's a very famous sort of archetypal ghost, because basically it's meant to be the ghost of either a nun who was walking to the nunnery, and she was attacked and thrown over the bridge, basically. Or alternatively, she was just it's a white lady, basically. The taxi driver pulled up. He was feeling a little bit amorous when he saw her standing by the roadside. It was freezing cold. He basically asked her into the cab. She refused to get in at first. She didn't speak, but in the end, she did get into the cab with him. She just pointed generally in the direction north, where I'm not exactly sure where she was going, and she didn't speak. And he just drove. He said the weirdest thing was, when he was like talking to her, she seemed solid. She seemed a perfectly normal person, but except she didn't speak. She was dressed very flimsily, and it was freezing cold. And as he was driving, he said, the weirdest thing was, he said, like a mist come down, and he said he felt disorientated completely. He could hardly see anything in front of his eyes. He was going to pull the taxi up, and it was almost like he was in another dimension. It was almost like time ceased to exist for him. He actually compared it to the famous Flight 19 and Bermuda Triangle, where this flight lieutenant Taylor basically couldn't see the sea, couldn't see the sky, complete and utterly lost. And suddenly, it was like he was in a time slip, basically. And then that sort of dissipated slowly. And he turned to say, well, thank God for that. And she wasn't there. Now, it sounds like a boring story, but the way he told it to me, and obviously I haven't got the book in front of me, he described it so vividly. And to this day, he swears that happened. He won't go down there anymore. He said, everyone, obviously the taxi rank says, I want a load of nonsense, but he just won't go down there. No matter what the fare is, he's not going back down there ever again, he said.
Lee Walker, thank you for talking to us.
Thank you, Peter.
Liverpool's biggest after-hours talk show, Late Night City, with Pete Price, on Radio City 96.7 and City Talk 105.9.